Thanks for listening and subscribing to Learning More. It's Russ with you. I hope you had a fantastic holiday. I did the whole holiday break thing. Christmas Day, I got sick. It wasn't the COVID. It was one of the other fun things that are roaming around, but it's sort of like a last minute Christmas gift, I guess. And then I did pass it on to others. So I guess I'm a re-gifter. I don't know. Anyway. It did give me a chance to sort of, you know, plan out some of the new episodes for this new year here. And we've got some really good ones. And, you know, today's episode makes me think of my entire career over the last, I'm not going to say how many decades because then you'll just know how old I am. But over the last several decades, I've changed careers, done different things, tried different things. And it's funny. It's like when I started these things, they felt like so great, like so right. And then by the time I had been doing them for a little bit, I'm like, why am I doing this? This doesn't feel right for me. And sometimes it was the circumstances changing. For instance, I worked in radio and they deregulated radio and the whole thing changed and it was all different. And it just didn't feel as fun as it was when I first started. Then I went into other careers where maybe it was more me that changed and my needs and what I wanted. And that's why I no longer wanted to do those things. So we're talking about that today. We're talking about changing your career. We're talking about loving your job. And we're possibly talking about the dream job. But I don't know. I don't know if I like that term or not. So we'll get into that a little bit. I'm joined by Terry McDougall. She's a author, a speaker, an executive coach over at Terry B. McDougall Coaching. Thank you for joining me, Terry.
Russ, it's so great to be here, and I love this topic.
Yeah, I think it's a great one, and actually, the timing on this is probably pretty good. But before we jump into the topic, tell us a little about yourself.
Well, I've been doing executive coaching with my own company for about 5.5 years now, and before I became an executive coach, I worked in the corporate world for about 30 years. Of course, I only started when I was like in elementary school.
So exactly.
You can figure out how old I am too. but I was a marketing leader. I led teams of people. I've experienced a lot of the things that I end up coaching people on. Personally, I'm married. I've got kids. And I have two dogs. I actually just adopted a beagle a couple days ago, and she's adorable. So I've got a 16-year-old and a 10-month-old dogs running around here, but they're being very good right now. So let's
hope it stays that way. Maybe we'll have a guest appearance. We'll see.
Yeah.
I did an interview, a couple seasons ago, and there was a bird that was just in the background the entire interview that just kept chirping and talking.
Oh, that's so funny.
It was kind of cool. So yeah, I kept it in. I liked it. let's get into this a little bit. Now, I said that I don't like the term dream job, but that is sort of what people are looking for when they're looking for a job, right? Like they're looking for that perfect job for them at that particular time, let's say. Mm-hmm. Is that term, though, just sort of setting the wrong expectations? Is that just setting us up for failure?
That's an interesting question. It reminds me of when I was a little kid. I grew up in the 60s, so I really am not 36. I'm much older than that. And there was a game that I always wanted, and I think I got it for Christmas one year called Dream Date. And you had to pull up this little gate, and there'd be like, kind of like a nerdy guy and, a jock guy. And then the dream date had like a white tuxedo jacket on and a bow tie and so forth. But I would sort of equate this question to like, is this your dream date, right? Your dream, because we can idealize things in our mind. And the reality is that when you're dating someone, when you start a job, there's what you think it's going to be like, and then what it's really like. And, I think that, before we hit record or before you opened this up, we were talking about this. And, I think that dream job is a vernacular that we're all familiar with, right? It's when you think about it, it's like, okay, I'm going to get to do really cool things. It fits me from a skill set standpoint. Maybe there's some prestige or, good money, whatever it is that's important to you that you think you're going to get from that job. But a lot of times you really don't know until you get into it. Or it could be that like that's a great job at a particular company, but maybe you go to another company. And I actually see this a lot in my coaching, where somebody has done a particular role at one company and then they go to another one for maybe a promotion or even the same job, and it's completely different.
I think that
another sort of related thing that I'd like to say is that as somebody who does executive coaching and career coaching, a lot of times conversations with people start out with, do you help people with their resume? And I say, well, yes, but that is not where we will start. We always start with you. You know, I have this whole, you know, process that I take people through of doing a lot of introspection to think about like, what am I good at? What do I like to do? What's needed in the marketplace? You know, because really when you're working, you're trading your strengths, your skills, your attitude, your time, your effort for money and benefits, right? So it's a value for value exchange. And I think a lot of times people get, you know, really almost, I don't know, emotionally caught up or even might even fantasize about the role that a job plays in their life. And when, I mean, again, going back to the whole, you know, dating thing, because a lot of times people get this idea like, oh, if I can just find the right gal or the right guy, that my life is going to be perfect. And no, you know, there's no such thing as a dream date, right? Like it can be a fun date, but that's a real person. Just like when you go to work for a company, there's going to be a lot of expectations there. And, you know, if you can fulfill, you know, say 70% of what your expectations are in that job, and then that probably is approaching a dream job. But there's going to be times when, you know, it's fantastic. And there's going to be times when it's going to be like, you feel like you got hit by a truck.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, with every job I've had, I mean, I've you know, ran my own company for years. And even that, it was so, there were so many cycles of like, oh man, I love getting up today. This is fantastic. And then there's days where it's just like, oh, really? I got to go do this. You know, you go through these cycles. When you're talking to your clients and you're advising people about this, how do you know, like, how do you talk to them about that? Like, are they just going through a cycle, or is this really like the decline? Is this something that I should leave and move on to something else? Like, how do you recognize that? How do you make that difference?
Yeah. I have a whole section in my book. My book's called Winning the Game of Work, Career Happiness and Success on Your Own Terms. And I've got a whole section in the book about that. You know, how do you determine, you know, where are you in your career? Because, you know, sometimes you might go into a job and you love it for a long time. I mean, I found this that, you know, the first time that I did a particular type of project, I was like, yay, this is cool. The second time I'm like, okay, good. I can perfect what I was learning last time. The third time you're like, ah, you know, I can do this in my sleep. The fourth time you're like, ugh, do I have to do this again? At least that's how I am. And that I always knew that was when I was ready for something new. But, you know, I think it's important to step back if you're feeling like, oh, I'm in the doldrums and a new job is going to fix the way I feel, to step back and ask yourself, like, what's the environment? You know, like, how am I feeling? You know, what's going on in my life outside of work? You know, if I'm feeling stressed or I'm feeling like this isn't a fit anymore, is this a short-term thing? You know, are we coming up on a big deadline and you're working long hours and maybe after that you'll get a break? You know, maybe you're going through an integration at work, you know, and that's also something that's going to have an end date at some point. You know, make sure that you step back and you take a look at what's going on with you in the context of what else is going on. I think another thing to think about is, especially before you decide to go out and try to get another job outside your company, is to actually look around inside the company and think to yourself, like, what is it that would make me happy? Because sometimes people don't think about that. All they know is that I'm not happy doing this. These are all the things that are wrong with this. And it's really important at some point to flip it and to say, okay, if you're not feeling good about this, what would make you feel good? Because sometimes it could be that you could actually go and ask for what would increase your satisfaction with what you're doing. And I actually see that a lot when I'm coaching people, that they'll complain about what's going on. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, we got to kind of get in touch with our emotions and so forth. But at some point, you know, once the venting's done, you have to think about like, okay, if I don't like this, what is it that I feel will make me happy? What would be a better fit for what I want to do every day so I feel more satisfied? And, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of times you don't have to leave your company to get the things that you want. And I do think that sometimes we can idealize like, oh, if I just went and worked at this company that like,
right, the everything grass would be is always greener, right?
Yeah. And there's actually yeah. really a lot of advantages to staying in your same company, because mm-hmm. even if you move to a different job or the job you're in evolves and maybe you like get rid of some of your responsibilities and you take on new responsibilities to, right. you know, maybe change a certain percentage of what you do every day. You know the players, you know the culture. Mm-hmm. you know, you're, even if it doesn't feel like a fit right now, it was a fit at some point. And if you go to a new company, there's no guarantee that some of those intangibles like the culture is going to be as satisfying as something that you already know about.
Yeah. You know, I you said something very key there is asking, you know, being in like the manager, like leadership role. I mean, I've managed, you know, it, one of the companies, I think the probably the most amount of people that I've managed is probably 30 or so, mm-hmm. but it's like when somebody would come to me and they would actually ask me for something, like mm-hmm. I had people that they would quit, they would leave. Oh, well, I'm not making enough money, or I don't get this, or I don't get that. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking like, you know, if you would have asked me for that,
sure.
I probably would have given you that and maybe even a little bit more, because, sure. you know, the cost to replace somebody, to bring somebody new in, to absolutely. Find somebody, get all the training, get them up to speed. It's like, it's so expensive to do that.
It is
so
expensive.
Asking your manager, your, you know, whatever it is, like, oh, you know, my job would be easier if this happened, if I had this, like,
sure.
it's such a hard thing to do though, for some people to,
yeah.
to make that. That move. And I think that that's actually something, instead of maybe advice for people that to you know, go down this ask route, like, what about advice for managers, for people that are leading a company, for those executives out there mm-hmm. that maybe, you know, people that are reporting to them that they're managing are afraid to go to them? How do you be like, open up a little bit more where you can be more approachable to those things?
I think that if you're a manager, you need to manage, and managing is an active pursuit. I've worked with a lot of people who are, you know, have a hard time prioritizing, and, you know, they're working a lot of hours and they're doing a lot, and they actually don't meet with the people that report to them very often. Like, maybe they have a staff meeting once a month or something like that. I think that it's very, very important to meet with your direct reports on a regular basis. You know, I used to meet with mine, you know, I now, if I had a team of 30, maybe I had like 4 or 5 direct reports. Mm-hmm. But every other week I would meet with them. It would be, you know, maybe 30 minutes if we were going to have something more in depth to discuss, maybe an hour. But that is a very valuable investment in, you know, communicating clearly so that they know what the expectations are, building a trusting relationship, making sure that what I expect is what they're doing so that there's alignment, and also that there's a forum that if there are any issues that we can talk about it. You know, sometimes it might be like, we don't have that much to talk about. They come in and we're there for 10 or 15 minutes and it's like, hey, how was your weekend? And hey, that's going well. Great. But you have the time, and it's important to keep that, because you are only going to be as successful as the productivity of the and happiness of the people under you.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you could mm-hmm. think like, oh, everything's great, and then all of a sudden half your people quit because you don't have a finger on the pulse of how they're doing.
Right.
And I've seen that, you know, I mean, actually that's been me earlier in my career. Like, I quit some jobs and they were like, what? We really liked you. We thought you had a future here. You know, but,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, one of the difficult things that I've talked about this, I also host a business show, and we've talked about this a bunch, about how, you know, leaders are not trained to be leaders. No. Much like, you know, I've got kids. I wasn't trained to be a dad. Mm-hmm. I remember when my daughter was like, I don't know, two and a half, somewhere in there. And I did something. I blamed her for something that I shouldn't have. And, you know, I explained to her, I'm like, well, you know what? I have been a dad as long as you've been a kid. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. Just like, you know, like I'm learning as I go here. You know, and it was like such this like real moment of like, and she totally understood it, which was like totally cool. She's on a path, I think, to be like a psychiatrist at some point, someday. possibly more than just for me, but maybe for others. But you know, like those types of things, like we don't, you know, learn how to do that. And then I think of like, you know, what is it? The Peter principle, right? Of somebody, that's this thing where
they
people are promoted
rise to their level of incompetency,
right? Yeah. Like, how do you avoid that? How do you like, cause you look at these other jobs, these other positions and moving up into these other roles at a company, how do you avoid getting to that point of where, okay, now I'm in this new role. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, what's your advice to those folks?
I guess I would say, I mean, I think that this is kind of interesting double-edged sword, and it's actually one of the things that we see a lot in gender differences in the workplace, that a lot of times men will say, you know, I know how to do like, you know, 30% of what's expected at that next level, but I'm going to give it a go, and I'm just going to like make it up as I go along and figure it out. And a lot of times women feel like, oh, I've got to know 99% of what's required in that job. It's not only, you know, I mean, that's a generalization, obviously, but I think that understanding that whatever anybody has done up until this moment is not what you're going to be required to do going forward. Even if you're in your job right now, there are going to be new challenges, things are going to evolve. The business environment is going to be different, you know, so you do have to make it up as you go along. Now, there is something, I mean, and I actually think, you know, the name of my book, Winning the Game of Work, is a good one, because it's just like, you know, playing tennis or playing sport, any kind of sport. Like, you know how to play. You can prepare yourself to show up. You know, you can jog, you can stretch, you can get a coach to teach you how to work on your backhand, whatever. But you don't know where the ball's going to bounce, right? When somebody serves you the ball, you're going to have to just be prepared to, you know, hit it wherever it goes. And I think that that's sort of the same thing in, you know, you've got to prepare yourself. You've got to become a good, you know, corporate athlete, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people just show up, right? They just show up. They don't ever read books. They don't think about, you know, maybe they're not even observing, you know, and you know, I guess we could kind of take that analogy a little bit further, that if you're, you know, say watching a professional tennis match and you're a amateur tennis player, maybe you're going to like get a little, you know, tip from watching somebody like, oh, I see how they serve the ball there. Like, maybe I'll try that the next time I go out to the court. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't even observe, you know, and say, well, you know, how did I feel when my boss treated me that way? Is that how I want my team to feel about me? You know, but there's a lot that you can do. I mean, there's a ton of, you can see, I think I've got, this is just a fraction of the books that I have, but before I became a coach, I read, you know, I was always reading because I wanted to move up, and I hired a coach at a really critical point in my career. And, you know, there's just a lot of things, you know, we don't know what we don't know. And sometimes either finding a mentor, reading books, you know, observing people who you admire their leadership style and saying like, how are they showing up? What are they doing? Right. And then trying to, you know, incorporate that can be really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you know, I love the, I mean, there's so many great books out there, so many fantastic business books out there. You know, I'm not getting paid by these guys, but Scribd. I don't know if you know about this app. It is so cool. Like, you pay like $10 a month and you get all these different books. And so like, you know, like the 10X method and all these different things are in this actual app that you can read for 10 bucks a month. I'm like, this is amazing. So it's like, once I found that, I'm like, okay, I don't have to go buy books. I can just use this thing and just keep reading and reading and reading. So I don't even know how many different business books or leadership books or, you know, just, you know, personal development books that I've read over the last year because of that app. So there you go. Free plug for Scribd. okay. So there's the people that are moving up and we talked about like, okay, well, maybe, you know, I know 30% of this role, I'm going to try to move up and, you know, getting motivated to that. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of people out there that they just don't see their value. Like they just maybe, you know, even the managers are just not recognizing it, or maybe the managers are recognizing it in a way where, you know, they're not perceiving that as recognition. So how do you like advise folks out there that are maybe not being recognized or feel that they're not being recognized in their position?
Well, I think that it's actually kind of funny. I came across some research when I was writing my book by, this professor at Harvard Business School, Tom DeLong, studies high achievers, and he came up with this hypothesis that high achievers are addicted to external validation. And when I read that, I was like, ugh, I was like, oh my gosh, it just recognized it as a truth because I recognized it in myself. And I also recognized it in a lot of people that I coach. And what I mean by that is that like a lot of times people give up their own power because they're like, oh, well, my boss didn't give me a pat on the back, or, you know, I'm not valuable because they're not promoting me. Right. So I guess I'm not good enough for that. And I think it's really important to, you know, see yourself in the context of what's going on, but also recognize that people have their own reasons for validating you or not validating you. And, you know, you talked about like, oh, well, maybe somebody is, they're recognizing your value. Well, one of the things that can happen is that somebody recognizes you as so valuable in a role that they do not want you to be promoted because they might have to replace you with two or three people. And I've actually seen that dynamic. I was never one for that. You know, I never was going to block somebody's promotion or, you know, somebody applying for another job within the company. But I saw other managers that did do that because they wanted to keep that person. But I think as the individual, it's just very important to try to look at yourself objectively, and it's impossible, I know, but to step out and really say to yourself, like, what am I good at? What do I like to do? If I really look and compare myself to others, you know, as objectively as possible, try to see yourself and recognize what strengths and skills and so forth you can trade for value in the workplace. You know, when I'm coaching people, I can reflect back to them, you know, like, well, this is what I see. And, you know, you did X, Y, or Z, and this was the outcome. Like, that's very valuable to try to show them what's going on within the context so that it can build their confidence. But I also think that it's important to recognize that sometimes if you're not feeling happy or not feeling fulfilled, it might not be you. You know, there is such thing as, you know, a job or a company that's not a good fit for you. It could be a great place for many other people, but maybe it's not a good fit for you for whatever reason. And there are also places that are very toxic to work in. And and sometimes, you know, we can be like that frog in the boiling water, right? Like where it wasn't boiling when they got in, but, you know, maybe the toxicity or the heat increased to the point where they're kind of used to it, but it's still not helping. Right. And sometimes you just got to hop out of the pot and realize, like, I'm going to boil to death if I stay here. I'm going to get out of this. And there's nothing wrong with you if you decide to do that. You still have value. And not only that, sometimes getting out of those, you know, negative. And when I say negative, I don't want to like blame it on the company, because a lot of companies are good, but maybe the role or the company is just not a good fit for you.
Right.
But a lot of times if you're in something that's not uncomfortable or that's not comfortable and you get out of it, you can sort of regain your confidence, you know, and realize like, oh, you know, that wasn't a good fit. Now I'm going to go out, you know, with more forethought and really think about what would be a good fit. What kind of people do I want to work with? What kind of work do I want to be doing? What will make me feel fulfilled? You know, once you get clarity on that, and then you can go out and start looking for a job.
Right.
But, you know, like I said earlier, a lot of people are like, you know, I think that thought process for many is like, if I get my resume really good, everybody's going to want me. And it's like, no, they're hiring you. They're not hiring your resume. And in fact, a lot of mm-hmm. people get job offers without ever giving their resume. Right? If you network, mm-hmm. I've had clients that the resume was an afterthought, that they came to them. They're like, we want to hire you. We need a resume to put in with the job application. Can you send one?
Yeah. I've had that where, you know, I've been approached by somebody where I don't know, I never gave them a resume. I don't know who this is, but okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Decent offer from a company. And it's like, okay, well this works out. So much of this is like, you know, mindset on yourself, right? Like mm-hmm. trying to figure like what you're looking for, what you need, what's going to, you know, fulfill you in your role. Now I'm going to go back to that same, like, you know, one of the first question about the dream job, like mm-hmm. how do you, like, since many jobs are going to have some flaws, like, how do you know, like, when you're applying for a position or when you're in a position in itself, like mm-hmm. you're at this place, like, how do you know that this is a right fit for you, that this is okay? And like, okay, so something goes toxic and you decide to leave, you know, like, or whatever, you maybe I should leave, maybe I shouldn't leave. I don't know. Like, how do you make those decisions? How do you advise people for those types of decisions?
Well, there's always going to be, you know, a modicum of, you know, uncertainty, right? You're never going to know 100% whether it's a fit. And I've heard of people that have gone through, you know, everything was hunky dory during the interview process. And then it was like a different place when you started working there. But I think that if you're, you have to get to know yourself first, right? Like, what are your mm-hmm. non-negotiables? What right. are you going to bring to the table that's going to create value there? I advise people when they're looking for a job, you know, if you're thinking about, okay, I'd really like to be X, whatever it is, go out and find somebody that's doing that job and ask them, what is it like? What's your day to day like? Because there's a lot of jobs, you know, it's funny. I worked in marketing and I always was involved in event planning. You know, I ran the entire event marketing team at the last bank I was at for a while. And I always had at least a few people on my marketing team that did events. And a lot of people think that that's like the greatest, sexiest thing. Like, oh, I want to do events, you know. And right. I always describe it as like, yeah, I get to, you know, go to cool places. I wasn't always the one planning them, but, you know, I did go to many events that we did. And, you know, yeah, I got to go to Miami. I got to go to, you know, places in California, whatever. But you'd be up at 5 a.m. stuffing gift bags, sitting at the, you know, registration exactly. table, handing out name tags, and then you'd be up until uh-huh. midnight, and then you'd get up and do it again. If we were lucky, maybe we would stay an extra day and right. get to do a little sightseeing or something like that, but you very rarely saw the outside of the hotel. So mm-hmm. that's just an example of, you know, something that looks sexy from the outside. A lot of time, and believe me, the people that did it loved it. They're some of the most passionate people.
Oh, yeah.
But that's not for everybody, because you're not going to the party as a participant. You're not a guest at the party. You're the person that's like dealing with somebody throwing up in the bathroom, or, right. you know, when the CEO's plane is late and you have to, you know.
Totally. Yeah.
You know, yeah, bide for time until he can get there and welcome all the guests or whatever.
Right. Yeah. I DJ'd live events and helped plan live events. And everybody's like, oh, that's such the coolest job. I'm like, well, it was in the beginning, but then, you know, it gets a little tiring being, you know, the only sober person in the room that can make
true.
A good decision.
True. And it, you know, and it's a job. I think that's the thing. Yeah. That's the key word there, is that it mm-hmm. is a job. Right. And, it's fun. If it's fun for the people who are attending, fantastic. That's part of it, but it's not party time for the people planning the parties.
Exactly. Yeah. I know I did this was a marketing role where I was trying to help them do set up events, like get everything, rolling for their, for their events. This is an insurance company and they just had no clue how to do events at all. So I did a couple of events for them, and the two events, one was in Vegas and the other was in New Orleans during Mardi Gras. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it is so cool. Like, I'm going to go to New Orleans during Mardi Gras. Mm-hmm. I saw nothing.
Yeah.
I had some chicken that was pretty good.
probably some of the nicest parts of that job were a lot of times we would mix business with pleasure. Like, so if we had clients in, we'd have business sessions all day. And then maybe we'd have half day where they could go out and tour things or whatever. As somebody working, I had to go on the tour. Right. So that was kind of fun. That was a fun part of it. Right. But you'd have to be the one taking your, checking off. Is everybody on the bus?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Did I remember to bring everybody back?
Yeah. Did I leave our biggest client at the Dude Ranch?
Oops. So, and now, it's kind of an interesting time to have this, this discussion about the dream job and knowing when to leave and, if analyzing a job to see if it's a good fit for you and all of that. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting time because, we're now possibly dealing with a tougher economy, right? Like, we've got people being laid off at Salesforce and at Amazon, I believe, at Apple. Like, there's places that are laying people off, and that makes it sound a little bit more scary, even though maybe in your industry it's growing and, there's no issues. But I would assume that with news like that and with an economy change, that people are more likely to settle for something. Is it better to just kind of hang in there and wait for something better, or do you go for it? Do you settle? How do you advise clients around that?
Well, there's no one size fits all. And even for people that have a quote unquote steady, stable job, just realize that, those people that have been laid off at Salesforce or whatever thought they had a steady, stable job until they came in on Monday morning and they said, hey, everybody in this department's invited to a meeting in the conference room and HR's there. And, I think that you've got to be clear about what's important to you. Right. I mean, for many people, they're willing, maybe they've saved up enough money that they can go for it, even if, maybe they're going into a risky field that, that is their dream job. They really want to do it, but, maybe they're not going to have that job for a long time for whatever reason. But just realize that there's no sure things out there. So how much of your life are you going to let go by sitting and saying, well, this is a stable job, this is a steady job? I mean, there's lots of, organizations that where people thought that was the case. And actually, I mean, for a while I was doing career transition coaching, and believe me, there were many, a 50-year-old that, I talked to them within a couple days of them getting the news that they were laid off, and, they'd worked at the company for 15 or 20 years. This happens. It does happen. And, maybe they stayed there because they thought this is a stable job. I don't love it, but I'm going to stay here. But I would also say that, the vast majority of them found other jobs and often would come back to me and say, it was very scary when I got laid off, but I want to tell you that it was the best thing that ever happened to me, because the process that we went through for them to think about, to really look at themselves as a 50-year-old, not as a 25-year-old when they went into whatever field it was, and think about, what is it that I want? What kind of company do I want? What kind of role do I want? And then to go out and do the work to find it. And not only that, but when you do that kind of introspective work, you interview better.
Right.
You know, you go totally. In and yeah, you can yeah. make the case so much better. Uh-huh. And it's, you know, yeah. if, and also if this is something you really want to do, the passion is going to come through versus mm-hmm. if you're like, well, you know, hey, I was the controller at my last company and I could do it for you too. Right. Yeah. That's not that inspiring to the hiring company.
Right. Right. Well, you know, I think like, I don't know. In thinking about all of this, I think talking to somebody like, okay, if you know, if a person was in a bad relationship, a bad marriage, you know, whatever it is, mm-hmm. they would probably seek either couples counseling or, you know, some sort of counseling mm-hmm. for themselves. Mm-hmm. Like it's the same deal here. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. this is just a different relationship. This is a relationship with you and a company. Mm-hmm. So it's a good idea to talk to somebody like an executive coach. So, I mean, you know, having you come on to have this discussion, we're just like, you know, right at the tip of the iceberg for what you're going to talk to somebody about if they come over to you. So if somebody is using an executive coach like yourself, like what can they expect?
Well, I'll give you an overview of what the process looks like. Mm-hmm. We really start with what's your goal? And, you know, I work with people who want to be more effective in their job and also people that are sort of at the crossroads or are in job search, right? Like people at the crossroads, I always say it's like, should I stay or should I go?
Right.
Right. And once they decide, and then we either say, okay, well, let's help you be more effective where you are, or let's help you design that roadmap to get you to that, you know, quote unquote dream job. But we start with the goal. Once there's clarity on the goal, we start building a roadmap. Okay, well, what's going to get us from point A to point B? And there's, you know, a lot of activities that they'll need to do. It could be everything from, you know, I've got a career assessment workbook that I'll have people do to just help spur that self-discovery. Mm-hmm. Very often, as we're going through the development of the roadmap, we uncover skill sets that need to be bolstered in order for them to be successful going forward. And I'll give you an example of, say, somebody who gets promoted at work, or maybe they want to be promoted, and they recognize that, you know, I'm going to need to work on my comfort with delegation, or I'm going to have to work on being more clear in my communications, whatever. But a lot of times people know what those are. Sometimes I'll work with them to uncover areas that they're going to need to work on to be successful going forward. The fourth area that I work with people on is, I call it environments, and I break this down into three areas. One is to give them a safe place to talk about what's on their mind around their career. You know, a lot of times people, you know, it's hard for them to talk to friends and family. Like maybe they don't want to stress out their spouse by saying like, hey, mm-hmm. I'm thinking about getting another job, or maybe they feel like they've talked to them too much, or they don't understand what's going on at work, whatever. You know, it's a safe place. They don't have to talk to any friends at work. It's confidential. The second area is, you know, the kind of like goal attainment environment, right? So like, I'm going to make sure that they're held accountable. They're going to, you know, make sure that they're moving towards the goal. Mm-hmm. I don't just say, oh, okay, you want to do that? Go ahead. Right. I'm going to be there the next time to be like, hey, right. you said you're going to do this last time. Did you do it? And nice. If you didn't, why not? And then the last area, is, the corporate, you know, political environment. Because many people have, a fear of corporate politics. Right. But I always like to reframe that to think about it's, you know, politics sounds like a dirty word, but really what we're talking about is influence. And a lot of times the difference between somebody being successful and not successful is how well they can navigate that political environment and, mm-hmm. you know, how well they can kind of build their coalitions and so forth. So I work with them on all those environments. And then the last thing is mindset. It is, you know, I truly believe that if you can get clear on your goal, you're willing to take action, and you can get the mindset where you believe your goal is possible, that you will achieve it. But a lot of times that's, you know, it's sort of like, you know, having your foot on the gas and the brake at the same time, if you don't get your mindset aligned.
Totally.
Right? People yeah. do a lot yeah. of stuff, but mm-hmm. they're like holding themselves back because they're afraid.
Right.
And, you know, you will not get your goal if you don't believe it's possible.
Yeah, totally. It's like the secret book, right? I mean, it's, yeah, you know, it's like you've got to imagine it can happen for mm-hmm. it to actually happen. So, okay. And if somebody, well, actually we got to mention your book too. Winning the yeah. Game of Work.
Winning the Game of Work, Career, Happiness, and Success on Your Own Terms. That's the subtitle. And it's, crazily enough, it's like 380 pages. Somebody else told me, he was like, this is like three books in one. but anyway, it is like jam packed with nice. A lot of lessons I learned. I interviewed lots of people about their careers, and there are a lot of exercises to help you be not only more successful at work, but happier. I mean, why work if why work so hard if you're not going to be, you know, happy and satisfied with what you're doing? I mean, this is life, yeah. you know?
Yeah. It's so much of your life, you know, like
yeah, absolutely.
When you think about it, 40 hours a week, that's a lot of time every single week. Like,
really,
you know,
is.
That's over 2000 hours a year. You better like it. Like, why be
right.
miserable?
And
why
it's
choose
possible.
To be miserable for 2000 hours a year?
Yeah. Don't, mm-hmm. don't like say, oh, I'm going to wait until I retire. I'll work really hard at a job I don't like now so I can retire. Well, you might die before that happens.
Yeah, exactly.
You actually hear that. You
totally.
Hear that. You
know, yes.
They retire and then they find out they have cancer and then, yeah. you know, they don't, yeah. they can't enjoy that time. So enjoy your time mm-hmm. now. You know, I guess whether the dream job exists or not, try to do something that you're going to enjoy, right?
Yeah.
Even if it's not the dream job, right? That there's a good
exactly.
balance between like what energizes you and, you know, hopefully not too much of the stuff that's a pain in the neck.
Right, right. Well, I'm over at, I'm at a company called Beeswax, and I'll go ahead and give them a shout because it's like, it's fantastic. I love it. And it gives me time for podcasting. So thanks, Beeswax.
Yeah. Awesome.
It's fantastic. Okay. So if somebody wants to reach out to you, if they want to get a hold of you, why don't you mention your website?
Yeah, they can go to terrybmcdougall.com and you can find out about me. You can see testimonials from my clients. You can read a couple chapters from my book and you can set up time with me if you want to do an exploratory call. It's free. To chat with me to see if it's a good fit. And then the book is available on Amazon if anybody's interested in that, either as an ebook or a paperback.
Awesome. And it's three books for the price of one. So there's your marketing.
It message, really right? is.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure talking to you. I mean, you're so easy to talk to. I mean, this role is perfect for you. So it was such a great conversation. So thank you for joining me.
Yeah. Well, right back at you. I really enjoyed myself. Thank you.
Thank you. And hey, and thank you for listening and subscribing to Learning More. And also for those of you that have been rating the podcast, thank you so much for that. Big shout over to all of you over on Podbean, where we host the podcast. We've got quite the community growing over there. So thank you for continuing to listen and for following us over on Podbean. As with any podcast that gives medical or legal opinion, the information is not meant to substitute professional advice. And I encourage you to seek a consultant or professional like Terry here to discuss your exact needs. If you've got something that you would like to learn more about, let me know. You know, this all started because years ago, I had this New Year's resolution of I'm going to learn something new every week. And then I said, well, you know what? I'm going to turn it into a podcast and share what I'm learning each week. So if you've got that resolution this year, maybe you've got like 54 ideas for me for this upcoming season. Fantastic. Reach out to me. You can do so with the link in the podcast description or just head over to learningmorepodcast.com. Again, thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. I'm Russ, and I look forward to learning more with you next time.